Hello and welcome to Oaks Talk on Tuesday the 17th of June 2025. My name is Bridget and I'll be compiling this week's edition in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers. Chosen and read by Rosemary Shortcall and Patricia Lee. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Oaks Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Oaks Talk online. Additionally, in case it's useful to you, the sunrise times this week will range from 4:43 on Monday 16th of June to 4:44 on Sunday 22nd of June. And the sunset times this week will range from 21:26 on Monday 16th of June to 21:28 on Sunday 22nd of June.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
A congestion charge could be introduced as soon as autumn on several roads in Oxford, as the County Council considers options for easing traffic in the city. Motorists could face a £5 daily charge for driving their cars through checkpoints on any of the roads without a permit at specific times if the measure is introduced. Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet will discuss proposals intended to ease congestion in the short term, including the temporary congestion charge. This comes after its plans to introduce 6 traffic filters on the city's roads, which were meant to be installed in August 2023, were pushed back due to the ongoing closure of Botley Road. The County Council faced pressure from Oxford Bus Group to come up with a Plan B for dealing with traffic, after Network Rail announced that Botley Road was expected to reopen in August 2026. If introduced, the congestion charge will be payable all year round, including bank holidays. Only cars without a permit would be charged for driving through, and all other vehicles would be exempt. The charge locations would be on Hythebridge Street, St Cross Road, Thames Street and St Clement Street every day from 7am to 7pm. As well as Marston Ferry Road and Holloway, Monday to Saturday from 7am to 9am and 3pm to 6pm. These are the same roads where the County Council plans to introduce traffic filters after August 2026. The Council say the congestion charge would end once Botley Road reopens and the traffic filters are implemented. The controversial traffic filter trial means that the motorist without a permit would be fined £70 for driving through filters, which would reduce to £35 if paid within 21 days. The permits for the congestion charge would be the same as the traffic filters, which include blue badge holders, unpaid carers, cars needed by businesses to carry goods or equipment, and emergency vehicles. A new type of permit will also be introduced specifically for the congestion charge, which would be available to residents of an area who have no option but to drive through a temporary charge location, as well as their visitors and those commuting to that specific area for work. The scheme would be enforced using automatic number plate recognition cameras, ANPR, at the congestion charge locations, with traffic signs being put in place to mark the location of charging cameras. Councillor Andrew Gant, Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said the proposal was a recognition that the traffic filter trial has been delayed to levels that have been out of control and that congestion has continued to get worse. Plans for a congestion charge are sure to divide opinion. The city wouldn't be the first in the country to charge motorists, with schemes implemented in London, Portsmouth, Sheffield, Bristol and Newcastle, though with widely differing rules to that being proposed here. London's congestion charge is enforced for fewer hours than the one being proposed in Oxford, though. On working days, London's charge operates between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. and 6 p.m., whereas most of the roads expected to have restrictions in Oxford could be between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. If approved, the charge locations would be in Hythebridge Street, St Cross Road, St Thames Street and St Clement Street, every day from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Marston Ferry Road and Holloway would see charges Monday to Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. The London congestion charge was introduced in February 2003 and initially cost £5 per day. Similarly, Oxfordshire County Council is looking to charge £5 per day. However, London's price today is £15, going up to £18 from next year under the mayoralty of Sadiq Khan. According to Transport for London, the capital saw a 30% reduction in traffic when the charge was introduced 22 years ago. It also said bus travel in the centre was boosted by 33% and limited traffic entering the zone by 18% during the week. Oxford Bus Company Managing Director Luke Marion previously said congestion was at emergency levels and demanded a Plan B in Oxford. Transport for London also credits the congestion charge to better air quality in the country's capital, despite TfL's other claim that around 4,000 Londoners die early because of pollution. Bristol's Clean Air Zone was introduced in 2022 and charges £9 daily to non-compliant vehicles, including cars, taxis and vans. Here in Oxford, the County Council is proposing the charge would apply only to cars. All other vehicles would not need to pay a charge and would not need a permit. Permits would be available for groups including carers, traders and blue badge holders, allowing them to pass through designating charge points without incurring fees. Permits would be free and valid for 12 months unless stated otherwise. Without a permit, the council says drivers could choose an alternative route or pay the daily charge. To pay, this can be done online or on the phone and must be done so by midnight and the day after you drive into the zone. Drivers can go through 6 congestion charge cameras. A congestion charge could be introduced on several roads in Oxford under the County Council's plans to ease traffic, but some will be exempt from paying the fee. The measure means motorists could face a daily charge of £5 for driving their cars through the charging points, if it is approved by Oxfordshire County Council. The roads affected would be Hythebridge Street, St Cross Road, Thames Street and St Clement Street every day from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. as well as Marston Ferry Road and Holloway Monday to Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. The same exemptions for the planned traffic filters will also apply to the congestion charge, which include blue badge holders, unpaid carers, cars needed by businesses to carry goods or equipment and emergency vehicles. A new type of permit will also be introduced for residents of an area who have no option but to drive through a temporary charge location, as well as their visitors and those commuting to that specific place for work. Permits are free and valid for 12 months. The congestion charge would apply to cars, but other vehicles would be exempt. Electric vehicles would still be charged. Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet will be asked to hold a 6-week consultation on introducing a congestion charge at their meeting next week.
Thames Valley Police have left the scene of last month's tragic Bicester Motion fire, with investigations set to continue. The fire, which broke out during the evening of Thursday, May the 15th, took the lives of three people. Two firefighters, 38-year-old Martin Sadler and Jenny Logan, 30, and a member of the public, 57-year-old Dave Chester. Two other firefighters were seriously injured, with one still in hospital. The other has now been released. It is not yet known what caused the fire in Hangar 79 of the Business Park, a Grade II listed building from the 1920s that had traditionally stored RAF aircraft. In recent years, its purpose had changed from planes to cars, with Bicester Motion regularly putting on its, inverted commas, scramble, by which it showcased classic vehicles. Police have now revealed that it has handed the Buckingham Road site back over to its owners as investigations, led by its major crime unit, alongside the Health and Safety Executive and fire investigators, continue. Public access to the site is still restricted by a police cordon. Assistant Chief Constable Dennis Murray said, "Our thoughts will always be with the loved ones of Jenny Logan, Martin Sadler and Dave Chester, as well as the injured firefighters following this tragic incident. This remains an unexplained death investigation and is being led by our major crime unit, who continue to work with fire investigators and the Health and Safety Executive to ascertain the cause of the fire and the circumstances surrounding the sad deaths of Jenny, Martin and Dave. Following thorough investigations by all involved, we have now left the scene and handed control of it back to Bicester Motion. The investigation is ongoing, and we will not be making further comment." This follows an initial report from the post-mortem examination, which revealed that all three people died from multiple traumatic injuries consistent with the collapse of part of a structure. Meanwhile, the inquests into the three deaths were opened at Oxford Coroner's Court on Tuesday, June the 3rd. They have been adjourned until November the 25th, and there are likely to be pre-inquest review hearings. Various ceremonies have been held in the tragedy's wake, including from fire and emergency services across Oxfordshire. In addition, Bicester Motion has published its own tribute, referring to close friend of the site, Dave Chester, who was a father of two.
The 800 trees on the Rose Hill Recreation Ground are thriving. They have been pruned this spring, so there should be a good crop of apples for all of us to pick and enjoy in the autumn. We want to make our woodland more accessible to everyone, so we are working with Junior Youth Club and Oxford Arboretum on tree trails for children and adults. We are now bidding for grants for tree identification boards, a picnic bench, signage and identification sheets for the tree trails. To find out about our crowdfunder, email rosehill.ifley.low.carbon@gmail.com.
An Oxfordshire charity has welcomed the government's U-turn on winter fuel payments. The move, which reverses last year's controversial cuts, means that people of state pension age with an income of £35,000 or less will once again receive the annual payment, bringing vital relief to a huge number of older people in Oxfordshire ahead of the colder months. The payment, worth up to £300, will now reach thousands in Oxfordshire who were previously excluded under the means-tested system introduced in 2024. Paul Ringer, CEO of Age UK Oxfordshire, said, "This is a hugely welcome step, and we are pleased and relieved that the government has changed its policy. We've heard from older people across the county who had to choose between heating and eating last year and were deeply anxious about how they would afford to heat their homes this winter. Reinstating the winter fuel payment for those on modest incomes is not just a financial lifeline. It's a recognition of the dignity and support our older population deserves. We're very grateful to everyone who signed the National Age UK petition, wrote to their MP, or took some other action to encourage the government to change course. You really made a difference. The winter fuel payment will be paid automatically to everyone over state pension age and then recovered from those with income above the £35,000 threshold through PAYE or income tax. To be eligible for the winter fuel allowance, a person will need to have reached state pension age by the week starting September the 15th this year."
A children's hospice in Oxford has been thanking its 663 volunteers for their dedication, hard work and commitment. Helen and Douglas House marked Volunteers Week, which ran from June the 2nd to the 8th, by celebrating its team of volunteers. The hospice organised a series of events to show its appreciation, including a Mad Hatter's Volunteers Tea Party in the hospice garden and Volunteer Long Service Awards. Each of the charity's 25 shops hosted special activities to thank their volunteers. In 24/25, the hospice's 633 volunteers donated 66,756 hours of their time, valued at £763,683. One of those volunteers is Gavin Hookman from Carterton, who volunteers at the Helen and Douglas House furniture shop in his hometown. Mr. Hookman, a self-employed graphic designer, turned to volunteering after struggling with anxiety from working alone. He said, "My counsellor suggested volunteering, as it would help get me out of the house for more social interaction. But at the time I worried it might just be a knee-jerk reaction which I couldn't follow up." In August 2024, Mr. Hookman began volunteering half a day every Friday at the shop. He said, "It's a lovely contrast to what I do at home, sitting at a computer designing. The charity shop is pure down to earth. And once I started volunteering, I knew it was exactly what I needed, to be around people more of the time. Socialising with others is wonderful, whether it's assembling flat pack furniture, helping customers load their purchases, or learning to pack test electrical items. I take great pride in volunteering for Helen and Douglas House." One of the most meaningful parts of Mr. Hookman's volunteering experience has been the priceless sense of community he has found at the shop. He said, "Gemma, the shop manager, is a force of nature. She has built a wonderful community in this shop with volunteers and customers. Regular customers come in for a chat, and it's the kind of thing that doesn't happen in a high street stall. After visiting the hospice in Oxford and witnessing the care provided to families, Mr. Hookman decided to take on a fundraising challenge. He said, "They do a wonderful job at Helen and Douglas House and get very little government funding, so need people to donate money and fundraise for them. Mr. Hookman is aiming to raise £5,000 by running 10 half marathons in 10 months, leading up to his 50th birthday in October 2025. He added, "I have done a couple of half marathons before, and I like to have a challenge in the diary." A lorry fire closed the A34 for hours and sparked miles of traffic in the county. The incident occurred at 3:32 a.m. on the A34 southbound near Cheveley. Firefighters from the Royal Berkshire Fire and Rescue Service from Newbury and Thiel attended the blaze, alongside a water carrier from Bracknell Fire Station. Three crews and one officer from Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service also attended the scene. A spokesperson said, upon arrival, crews found one lorry on fire. Two firefighters equipped with breathing apparatus used one hose reel, one main jet, the water carrier and foam to put out the fire and make the scene safe. The scene was handed over to National Highways. They were on scene for approximately 4 hours and 36 minutes. National Highways closed the road following the incident as the lorry was cleared, with the closure in place for more than 11 hours. Resurfacing was required as a result of the blaze, with photographs shared by National Highways showing the lorry blackened by flames with charred damage across the road. A spokesperson for National Highways said, the A34 southbound remained closed within M4 at Cheveley following an earlier lorry fire. Substantial damage has been caused to the road surface and a resurfacing operation will be taking place. There is a 30-minute delay and 3 miles of congestion on approach.
Nearly two-thirds of households in the Thames Water Network area are trying to cut back on their current level of water usage, new research shows. The findings come after the driest spring since 1956 and growing concerns over the long-term availability of water in the UK. According to a survey by Thames Water, 64% of households in its service area are now actively reducing their water consumption. Andrew Tucker, Water Demand Reduction Manager at Thames Water, said, "The southeast of England gets less annual average rainfall than Sydney, Rome and Lisbon, and is feeling the impact of climate change and extreme weather events. The UK faces a shortage of water in 25 years, and whilst people are aware, behavioural change isn't coming through yet, as our latest data shows. Being water efficient is very easy. It's the simple things that make a difference." The research found 45% of those cutting back on water use are motivated by saving money, while 36% are driven by environmental concerns. According to the Environment Agency, the UK may struggle to meet demand for water in 25 years, and more than three quarters of the 2,000 households surveyed by Thames Water said they were aware of it being possible for the UK to face a water shortage in that time frame. Thames Water is encouraging customers to adopt easy water-saving habits, such as shortening showers. The average shower lasts 8 minutes, but reducing this by just 2 minutes can save £73 a year on water and energy bills, as well as around 20 litres of water per person per day. Despite ongoing campaigns, 42% of people still leave the tap running while brushing their teeth. A running tap can use 6 litres of water per minute, and even turning it off 10 seconds sooner can save more than half a litre. Leaky toilets are another major source of waste, with each one losing between 200 and 400 litres per day, the equivalent of a family's total daily water use. Cutting just 2 loads of laundry per week could save households £46 annually. Collecting rainwater is another underused method of conservation. Only 27% of Thames Water customers currently use a water butt, despite its effectiveness. Thames Water's free water-saving calculator on its website can help households to work out how much water and energy they are using and receive tailored advice on how to save more. Thames Water is the UK's largest water and wastewater services company, serving 16 million customers across London and the Thames Valley.
An Oxfordshire MP, working with the Future Flood Resilience Forum, recently brought communities and organisations together to identify ways to protect Wantage and Didcot from flooding. The Didcot and Wantage Flood Summit in East Honey was attended by parish councils, local flood groups, the Environment Agency, county and district council officers, Thames Water, Network Rail, and others with a role in flood prevention and mitigation. Didcot and Wantage MP, Ollie Glover, was also in attendance. A presentation about repeat flood events in East Honey was used as an example to prompt discussion on how to protect communities from more extreme weather events that are becoming more frequent as a result of climate change. Actions identified were wide-ranging: upgrading standards, new housing developments with flood prevention as a priority, educating landowners about flood management, water treatment wetlands, improved bridges and culverts, enhanced water level monitoring, helping communities set up their own flood groups, and spreading the word about the resources available to residents and businesses, such as the Oxfordshire Flood Toolkit. Barry Gooch of the Future Flood Resilience Forum said, "Bringing the community, regulators and responsible bodies together in one room has given a shared understanding of the challenges and issues involved. Working alongside Ollie, we will build on the summit to quantify the problems being faced and work out how to give our communities a measure of flood resilience." Mr. Glover said, "There are multiple agencies and landowners with a role to play in flooding, and it's easy to fall into a pattern of blame. The idea of the Flood Summit was to bring the bodies involved and the communities impacted together to better understand the causes and what is being or could be done collectively to prevent the devastating impact of flooding. This is an approach I have used on a smaller scale in Didcot Ladygrove, which has resulted in practical actions by Network Rail, local councils and residents to address flooding. I see my role as one of facilitating better communication locally and pushing for changes to national legislation and funding where it is needed. There was a huge amount of knowledge and expertise in the room at the Didcot and Wantage Flood Summit. Several actions were agreed, and I am working with Barry to keep up the momentum."
Coins found by a metal detectorist, which were minted in Oxford during the English Civil War, are now up for auction. Steve Hickman, 59, bought a second-hand metal detector from eBay after watching the hit BBC TV show starring Mackenzie Crook and Toby Jones. He secured a permission to search farmland near his home in Buckinghamshire, even though he was told nothing of significance had been found there for over a century. On a wet day in February 2023, he got a strong signal on his device and dug down to unearth a pottery vessel filled with silver coins. In total, there were 1,064 coins, spanning the reigns of Elizabeth I in the 1560s to Charles I in the 1640s. The latest coins had been minted a few months before the Battle of Aylesbury during the English Civil War in November 1642. The battle at Holman's Bridge saw the heavily outnumbered parliamentarian forces defeat Prince Rupert's royalists. The vessel may have been a wage pot to pay soldiers who fought in the battle, or the life savings of a wealthy individual who had planned to flee. Mr. Hickman, a joiner from Prince's Risborough, Buckinghamshire, carefully recovered them all and took them home to lay out on his dining room table before contacting the finds liaison officer to report his historic find. He is now selling the hoard, which includes 409 Charles I silver shillings and rare Aberystwyth mint issues at Essex Coin Auctions. He said he wanted to thank Mackenzie Crook, who created Detectorists, for helping him discover the pastime. The father of two told Maine Online, "It was complete beginner's luck, and I had only been detecting for 2.5 months. I must credit Mackenzie Crook, as it was his series, Detectorists, that got me interested in the first place. It inspired me to go to my local detecting club, and the people I met were just like the characters on the show, with the same banter. It was brilliant, and I decided to buy a second-hand metal detector on eBay." Mr. Hickman added that the landowner said his family had owned the land since 1920, and nothing significant had ever been found. Recalling the day of the discovery, he said, "I suddenly got a really strong signal and dug down 9 inches, but there was nothing there, so I covered the hole up. But after 20 minutes, I decided to have another try and dug the hole again, and at a foot down, I saw silver and reached down to pick up a fistful of silver coins. One of them had Elizabeth I's face on it, and I got more and more excited. It took 15 handfuls to fill the bag with coins, which weighed 8 kilograms.
More than £1 billion has been paid in financial redress to sub-postmasters wronged by the Horizon IT scandal, the government has said. The Department for Business and Trade said money has now been paid out to more than 7,300 sub-postmasters across all Horizon-related redress schemes. The announcement comes just weeks after lead campaigner and former sub-postmaster Sir Alan Bates said the schemes had turned into a quasi-kangaroo courts. Sir Alan told the Sunday Times last month that Department for Business and Trade sits in judgment of the claims and alters the goalposts as and when it chooses. The Chief of National Trading Standards has said a cowboy builder caused real harm as he was jailed for botched building jobs. David McCallum of the Magnolias Bister was jailed for a total of 30 months for a number of fraud offences and operating companies while bankrupt. Oxford Crown Court heard he operated a number of Phoenix companies after being declared bankrupt in 2018. The total financial harm he caused over a 4-year period to 11 households was £301,851. The court heard that he used different names, such as McCallum, when running the businesses. Oxford Crown Court confirmed the name it had listed was David McCallum. After the sentencing, Lord Michael Bishar, chairman of National Trading Standards, said, "Mr. McCallum's action have caused real harm to consumers, causing considerable distress as people were duped out of thousands of pounds and undermined trust in honest and legitimate builders and businesses. Cracking down on rogue traders like McCallum helps protect local communities and helps safeguard a level playing field for honest, law-abiding businesses. I hope this sentence sends a strong signal that these crimes will not be tolerated, and I urge local neighbourhoods to look out for each other and report any suspicious cases like this." Councillor Jenny Hannaby, Oxfordshire County Council Cabinet Member for Community Wellbeing and Safety, added, "The vast majority of Oxfordshire's building complete their work on time and to their customers' satisfaction. When this is not the case and traders take money for rushed bodge jobs, then our trading standards team are here to protect residents from the actions of rogue traders. These customers have been left in a stressful situation and considerably out of pocket due to the actions of Mr. McCallum, and in some cases has taken years to put the situation right." Jodie Kerman, Oxfordshire County Council's Head of Trading Standards, said, "We advise anybody who is looking for a reliable trader to always get a number of detailed quotes, check with friends and family for trusted recommendations, and consider a Trading Standards approved trader from our Buy with Confidence scheme." Sentencing McCallum, recorder John Hardy KC said, "From January 2019 to October 2022, You engage in an elaborate web of deceit. You are a cowboy builder, a third-rate con man, and rotten to the core. McCallum, 46, previously pleaded guilty to the fraud and bankruptcy charges. As well as being jailed for 30 months, he must pay a nominal fee of £1 within 28 days and was disqualified from being a company director for 8 years. A woman was arrested at a car boot sale in Oxford after a large quantity of suspected stolen power tools were found. The arrest took place at Kasam Stadium car boot sale in Grenoble Road, following a report of suspected stolen power tools being sold, according to police. When officers attended the sale, they found a van containing a large quantity of power tools and more laid out for sale. A spokesperson for the Thames Valley Police Rural Crime Task Force said, "A van containing a large quantity of power tools plus tools laid out for sale were located. A female selling the tools was arrested on suspicion of handling stolen goods and will be interviewed shortly." They added that the van and all the tools have been recovered and officers will begin to sort through the goods. They added, "We are aware that a lot of victims of tool thefts will be wanting to know whether their items are within this van. We will provide further updates in due course. Thank you to the member of the public who made us aware of this today. Please continue to report suspicious incidents to us on 101 or inform Crime Stoppers anonymously." Images of the van and goods released by the police show a huge quantity of toolboxes, power tools, electrical equipment and hardware. Destructive bottom trawling, which involves dragging large nets along the seafloor, could be banned across more vulnerable areas of English seas under new government proposals. Marine and fisheries stakeholders are being asked to take part in a consultation on the prohibition of destructive bottom-towed fishing gear. Environment Secretary Steve Reed said, "Urgent action is needed to protect seabeds and nature before irreversible damage is caused."
Plans for the 70 million revamp and reopening of a controversial immigration removal centre have been branded shocking by an MP after new details of the refurbishment were released by the government. The revamp of Campsfield House in Kidlington will involve refurbishing its existing site and building new accommodation, documents released this week reveal. The centre was shut in 2019 after facing years of problems, including escapes, riots and complaints about conditions. The Home Office announced in 2022 that it intended to reopen the site, which was followed by construction company Galliford Try announcing it had won the contract to renovate it in 2024. In August 2024, demonstrators took to the streets in Oxford city centre over the controversial plans. MPs and councils have strongly opposed the reopening of the site, and a campaign group titled Keep Campsfield Closed was formed. A document published by the government on Wednesday shows the refurbishment will take place in two stages: existing buildings and new build accommodation. A statement on the page outlining the plan said, "Campsfield will be a mixture of refurbished and new build accommodation, built to the latest standards, taking account of findings from external security reports and internal lessons, learned reviews to provide modern, safe, secure and connected accommodation for detained men." It said 160 bed spaces will be created in refurbished accommodation, with further expansion of up to 400 beds in the future. The government said the centre will be used to accommodate, quote, "a mixture of time-served foreign national offenders and immigration offenders while we prepare to remove them from the UK. It added that planning consent will be obtained before phase two of the development is proceeded, and that it is holding discussions with local councillors, MPs and other stakeholders. Callum Miller, MP for Bicester and Woodstock, has campaigned against the reopening of Campsfield House for years. Reacting to the latest development, he said, Theresa May's government was right to close Campsfield House in 2019. It's shocking that the new Labour government are not only reopening it, but now proposing to increase its capacity. They have not explained why an expanded facility is needed, nor how they would ensure it would be safer than the previous centre. The Home Office signed the contract for refurbishment during the general election campaign, when Parliament could not scrutinise it. There is no planning permission for an expansion, but a contract had already been promised. I will work to ensure that the government is held to account for the management of the millions of pounds it proposes to spend. The government says the site will be a secure IRC, and detained men will be held under immigration powers and will not be free to leave the centre or access the local area. The IRC will have robust physical security measures and appropriate security procedures in place to ensure the facility operates safely and securely.
The new Mayor of Wantage says he is honoured and humbled to take on the role. Councillor Ian Cameron has been formally appointed to the role and will be supported by Councillor Chris Walters as Deputy Mayor. Councillor Cameron said, I am both honoured and humbled to be elected Mayor by my own Town Council colleagues. As Mayor, I will do to the best of my ability and act in the interests of the town's residents and businesses and represent the town at events both in and beyond Wantage. A long-serving councillor and former deputy mayor, Councillor Cameron brings experience in public service, community organisations and local government. He has announced his first mayor's charity will be Parkinson's Me, an organisation supporting people living with the neurodegenerative disease. Councillor Cameron said, the mayor traditionally nominates local organisations to be mayor's charities, and the first I have chosen is Parkinson's Me. Councillor Walters brings experience of public service to the Deputy Mayor role and is well positioned to support the Mayor throughout the year, the Council said. Councillor Walters added, I am honoured and delighted to have been elected Deputy Mayor by fellow Wantage Town Councillors. It has been going for 78 years and the friendship is as warm as ever. The Oxford Bond Twin City Link was set up in 1947 as Europe tried to rebuild relationships after 6 years of war and has continued ever since. And if proof was needed that it is still flourishing, it came in the recent Bond Week when a party of 38 from the German city visited Oxford. They included dancers, artists, councillors, council officers and a head teacher. One of the highlights was a civic reception in the Assembly Room at Oxford Town Hall, hosted by the Lord Mayor Louise Upton, who welcomed the visitors in German. She received a framed map of 18th century Bonn from Bonn District Mayor Jochen Rieschall. The two groups of dancers from Bonn and members of the Marion Flanagan School of Irish Dance gave rousing displays at the Town Hall reception. The Bonn dancers had a busy time, meeting other Oxford dance groups and performing in the Westgate Centre and with the Oxford Morris Men at a farewell party in North Oxford Community Centre in Summertown. The groups had free time to visit the sites of Oxford and were invited to a get-together on the towpath at Long Bridges to watch the Summer Eights rowing event. One surprise was the flypast of a Second World War Spitfire. Vory Carr, who chairs the Oxford end of the Oxford Bond Link, said, We were particularly glad to welcome so many visitors from Bonn to celebrate 78 years of the twinning link between our two great cities. The visit of friends from Bonn also coincided with the 80th anniversary of VE Day and gave us the opportunity to lay a wreath at the War Memorial in St Giles and to strengthen our bonds of friendship. We were taken back to the Link's 70th anniversary celebrations in Oxford in 2017. Members of the Oxford Philharmonic Orchestra performed at a series of concerts at the Western Library, while students Helen Hardy, Oscar Barber, Daniel Pawson and Tom Marshall attended a burger fest in Broad Street. A permanent reminder of the Link in Oxford is in Bond Square. Thames Valley Air Ambulance said that May had been its busiest month in 2 years, providing hundreds of people with urgent care. The charity, which responds to critical care emergencies across Oxfordshire, as well as Berkshire and Buckinghamshire, said it responded to more than 300 incidents during May alone. A spokesperson for the air ambulance said, "In May, we experienced our busiest month in 2 years. We were called out 301 times to help people in need of urgent critical care. That's an average of nearly 10 life-saving missions every single day. Summer is here, and for many that means more time outdoors, on the roads or in the water. So please look out for others and yourself in the community this summer. While you enjoy the sunshine, know that our crew is ready 365 days a year to respond if things go wrong. We hope you never need our services, but if you do, we're here for you." From the Air Ambulance's base at RAF Benson, the flight time to anywhere in its three-county patch is just 15 minutes, reaching a community of more than 2 million people. Last year, the Air Ambulance responded to a total of 3,129 incidents. More than 150 nurses who trained in Oxford will hold their final reunion later this month. The nurses who trained at the former Radcliffe Infirmary will gather on Saturday, June the 28th, to mark the centenary of the Radcliffe Guild of Nurses, which was founded in 1924. Zante Cummings, president of the Guild, said, "Sadly, as the last nurses to be trained at the Radcliffe Infirmary qualified in the 1970s, our membership is now dwindling with age. Having reached our centenary, we've taken the reluctant decision to wind down the Guild and put remaining funds into a charitable trust. The day-long reunion will include a visit to the infirmary site, a church service in St Giles Church, and the Guild's final annual general meeting." The NHS needs 1 million regular blood donors to maintain its blood supply, officials have said. Low blood stocks prompted officials to issue an amber alert over supply for hospitals last year, and NHS Blood and Transplant said that more must be done to avoid a red alert, which means that blood supply is so low that there is a threat to public safety. Officials described the last year as challenging for blood stocks, highlighting how just 2% of the population keep our blood stocks afloat. This means 800,000 people sustained England's blood supply over the past 12 months, and 1 million are needed for demand. The Great and the Good paid tribute at the weekend to former Oxford United Youth Development Officer Malcolm Elias, who sadly died aged 71 following a short illness. Elias was instrumental in the progress of the likes of Joey Beecham, Chris Allen, Chris Hackett and Dean Whitehead during his 9 years at the Manor Ground. He also worked at Swansea City, Southampton, Liverpool and Fulham, where he was approaching his 16th anniversary. Former Youth manager Brian Horton posted, "Sorry to hear about the passing away of Malcolm Elias. He did a fantastic job for me and Dave Moss with the young players he brought through the youth system at Oxford United. Love and condolences to his family." Theo Walcott, who came through the Saints Academy and later spent more than a decade at Arsenal, posted on Instagram, "I'm heartbroken to hear of the passing of Malcolm Elias. He was the scout who gave me my first real opportunity in football. The one who saw something in me before the world did. Malcolm believed in me at the very start of my journey, and for that I'll always be grateful. His eye for talent was unmatched, But more than that, he had a genuine passion for helping young players chase their dreams. Without his belief and support, I wouldn't be where I am today. Thank you, Malcolm, for everything. Your impact on my life and career will never be forgotten. Rest in peace. He had a deserved reputation throughout his career for identifying and nurturing talent, with spells across Oxford United, Swansea, Liverpool, and most recently Fulham, where he'd worked since 2009. On the South Coast, he played a key role in the emergence of players such as Gareth Bale, Theo Walcott, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Luke Shaw, Adam Lallana, Callum Chambers and James Ward-Prowse, to name a few. Premier League champions Liverpool said, "Liverpool FC is saddened by the passing of Malcolm Elias following a short illness. A respected talent spotter throughout the game in this country, Elias was the club's academy head of recruitment after joining the Reds from Southampton in 2007. His departure from Liverpool in the summer of 2009 saw him move south to Fulham, where he would serve as their head of academy recruitment for the past 16 years. The thoughts of everyone at Liverpool FC are with Malcolm's loved ones at this sad time." A man from Wantage has completed 12 marathons in as many months in memory of his granddad. Sam Barson has raised more than £4,000 for the British Heart Foundation in tribute to his granddad, who he called Nin, who died in November 2023 due to heart failure. He dealt with various other health conditions and illnesses, including cancer, for many of his later years. Mr. Barson completed his 12th marathon on Saturday, June the 7th, on what would have been his granddad's birthday. His final run was along the Ridgeway from Watlington, finishing at the monument in Wantage. He said, "Nin passed away due to heart failure, but he dealt with various other health conditions and illnesses. He battled cancer for many of his later years and somehow always shook it off like it was nothing. He always displayed tremendous strength and resilience, despite having his day-to-day life completely and utterly affected. Nin had COPD, which caused him to be short of breath for the majority of the time. As much as these were all life-changing illnesses, they never stopped him from living his life to the full and attempting to get the most out of each day." Nearly 2,000 footballers descended on an Oxfordshire town for its annual football festival. Didcot Town Festival of Football was another roaring success this year, as a total of 241 teams from across the country participated in the event. The festival has been going strong for almost 20 years, since taking over from its predecessor, Didcot Town Boys, and this year was no exception. Boys and girls aged 6 to 17 got involved in the tournament, in what was described by organisers as a monumental effort from the club. Volunteer for the football club, Daz King, said, "We work hard to actively encourage youngsters to play football while being out in the fresh air, fit and healthy and enjoying the beautiful game. We rely heavily on our committee, managers, coaches and parents to ensure the tournament can run smoothly over the weekend. This year, adult matches were played on Friday evening for the first time, as both men and women enjoyed an in-house tournament." Scores of people turned out for the annual Wallingford Thames Run 10K last weekend. The event took people on a scenic route through Cromarsh, along the River Thames and into Wallingford. After the event, the organisers posted on their Facebook page a huge thank you to all our amazing volunteers. Your time, energy and enthusiasm helped make the Thames Run a smooth, safe and unforgettable experience. From setting up early to cheering the runners on, we couldn't have done it without you. You are the heart behind the scenes and we're so grateful. The event's website added, "The Thames Run is a fun-packed, multi-terrain race that takes runners from the heart of Cromarsh, along the banks of the stunning River Thames and through Wallingford."
Oxfordshire's David Beckham will mark his 50th birthday year by guest editing an edition of Country Life magazine. The former England captain and businessman will join the editorial team for the October the 22nd edition of the magazine, with the aim of celebrating what the countryside means to him and his family. He follows in the footsteps of royal family members who previously joined the editor-in-chief Mark Hedges at the helm, including the King, the Princess Royal and the Queen. Mr. Beckham said, "I am honoured to have been invited to guest edit an edition of a magazine that I have always admired and read. I am really looking forward to working with the editorial team to produce an issue that will celebrate what the countryside and the great British landscape means to me and my family." This comes as Beckham is to be awarded a knighthood in the King's birthday honours, according to reports by The Sun. The UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador, who turned 50 in May, would take on the title of Sir, and his wife, former Spice Girl Victoria Beckham, would become Lady Beckham. The football star regularly documents his life in the countryside at his Cotswold mansion by posting pictures and videos on his Instagram, including him harvesting vegetables, gardening, and his flock of chickens. Mark Hedges, Country Life editor-in-chief, said, "I know he has a deep love of the countryside, which has grown since he retired as a professional footballer, although he is, of course, still extremely busy as a businessman and an ambassador for a host of causes, such as UNICEF and the King's Foundation, as well as being co-owner of Inter Miami CF in the US and Salford City Football Club in the UK. As someone who is passionate about the countryside, I'm excited to see what his special commemorative issue will bring. The one-off edition aims to highlight how the countryside has played an important part in Beckham's life. It will feature his favourite view, his best love recipe, and spotlight his rural champions, including the craftsmen and women who helped shape his home in the Cotswolds. Mr. Beckham, who played for his country 115 times, is the only Englishman to score at three different World Cups, and his career included the treble-winning campaign of 1998-99, when Manchester United won the Premier League, FA Cup and Champions League.
A D-Day commemoration has been held at a former RAF base in Chiltern, in honour of those who took part in the Normandy landings. The annual event took place at the Harwell Stone on Saturday, June the 7th, marking the anniversary of D-Day with a tribute to the men and aircraft who departed from RAF Harwell on June the 5th, 1944. Despite a yellow warning for thunderstorms, the ceremony was able to go ahead in dry conditions. The Harwell Stone marks the end of the runway from which aircraft of No. 38 Group Royal Air Force took off from RAF Harwell on the night of June the 5th, 1944. Those aircraft towed Horsa gliders carrying troops from the 6th Airborne Division. The soldiers were among the first British forces to land in Normandy during the main assault for the liberation of Europe. Wreaths were laid around the stone by local civic and business leaders, members of the armed forces, emergency services and branches of the Royal British Legion. Pop-up play events in Oxford will welcome families with children to the city centre this summer. The first two pop-up events, in which free play equipment and activities are provided to children with their caregivers in the city's public spaces, saw a great turnout in a programme designed to make families feel more at home in Oxford. The County Council funded initiative has collaborated with the Oxfordshire Play Association to not only boost the family-friendly feel of the city, but also to see where works best for a city centre playground. At the first event in Oxford's Westgate Centre during the May school half-term, more than 400 people came. The second in Broad Street also saw a great turnout earlier this month. Lord Mayor Louise Upton, Cabinet Member for Planning, attended the Broad Street event and shared how important she thinks playing is for younger people. Early experiences shape the brain, Miss Upton said. Connections are forming at an incredible rate, and having loving interactions with the people around you sets the foundation for a happy, healthy life. Children will be better school students, have better health and better job prospects. I can't overstate the importance of playing with children to stimulate healthy development. The pop-up play events are the culmination of a project in partnership with the London School of Economics Urban 95 Academy, which is aimed at making councils consider cities from the point of view of a toddler at 95 centimetres high and their caregivers. Ms Upton's background as a neuroscientist gave her particular motivation to see the project come to Oxfordshire. She added, "We have 7 million tourists come to Oxford every year, and yet there are families who live here who've never visited the city centre. My dream is that by providing spaces like this in the city centre, young families will come into the centre, enjoy it and make use of the free museums that are on offer. Providing space in the city centre where young children can play and their caregivers can stop and chat is one way that we can support our next generation and the people looking after them." The Broad Street pop-up hosted an activities area designed for the under fives. As well as soft play, Oxford organisations like the Story Museum, the History of Science Museum, the Western Library and the Toddlian, the Bodleian for little ones, attended to promote their child-friendly activities. The next three pop-up plays will take place in the Castle Quarter, with full details of the schedule available on the County Council's website.
Hundreds of people gathered for a festival to celebrate 200 years of Jericho. Jericho's Street Fest at the weekend attracted residents and visitors and featured a market stall fair, a community run and a Saints Feast Day celebration. This year marks 200 years of Jericho, the date which historians estimate the neighbourhood itself came to exist, making the festival doubly special, according to organisers. Celebrations started on Friday and continued until Sunday. It was the second year of the Combined Events Festival. Based around St Barnabas Feast today, the Saint of Jericho St Barnabas Church, which falls on Wednesday, the idea was put forward in 2023 to combine popular community events into one big spring festival. After a successful first year last summer, the same format was repeated, with the Jericho Singers concert on Friday, a street market closing the streets of the neighbourhood on Saturday and Run Jericho on Sunday. The church's mass for St Barnabas took place on Wednesday.
National Fish and Chip Day returned for its 10th anniversary recently, and more chippy fans have been having their say on where to get the best fish dish in the county. Coming out resoundingly on top was Posh Fish in London Road, Headington. The family-owned business opposite Berrynoll Park in Oxford has been frying since 1982 and says excellent fish and chips don't happen by accident. Posh Fish credit the business's attention to detail, commitment to the best ingredients and many years of experience to bring their excellent fish and chips together. A popular chippy coming in at close second was Harrison's Fish and Chip Shop in Elms Parade, Botley. It's not the first time the prestigious shop has come close to glory, with the National Federation of Fish Fryers recognising its excellence in the shortlist of the Fish and Chip Awards for 2025. Also a family business, Harrison's Chippy has raised to prominence in just 4 years since it opened in 2021. Another fish and chip shop that was highly commended by customers was Albert's Fish Bar in High Street, Kidlington. Praised by reviewers for portion sizes, community feel and friendliness of the service, the Fish Bar is high on the list of Oxfordshire's establishments. Other mentions of popular fish and chip suppliers in Oxford included Alice's Fish and Chips in Wood Farm, White Hart in Headington, and Ocean Blue Fish Bar, just south of the city in Kennington. In South and West Oxfordshire, Millbrook Fish and Chips in Grove proved popular, as did the Harbour Fish and Chips in Farringdon and the Penguin Chip Shop in Burwell Drive, Whitney. Finally, in Charwell and North Oxfordshire, Off the Hook in Kidlington got a mention, along with two in Bicester, Golden Kitchen and Market Square Fish Bar, plus Q Fish on Chatsworth Drive in Banbury. National Fish and Chip Day has gone from strength to strength since its inception in 2015, according to organisers. President of the Edible Oil Distributors Association, Gary Lewis, said, "National Fish and Chip Day has always brought the nation together to celebrate this iconic dish. The day is designed to celebrate everyone in the industry, from fishers who bring in the catch, to farmers who grow and harvest potatoes and peas, to the shops and restaurants."
Clearing out old belongings can be overwhelming, but items of real value and historical interest often emerge. To understand an heirloom's worth and preserve your family's legacy, we asked antiques expert Caroline Hawley, known from Bargain Hunt and co-owner of Hawley's Auctioneers in East Yorkshire, to answer common questions about valuing family heirlooms. What type of items might be particularly valuable? When you are clearing out the back of a cupboard, things like old toys, games, Barbies, and especially with the Barbie resurgence following the release of the movie, and matchbox toys are all really popular, says Hawley. If they're boxed and in good condition or mint condition, that's always a great thing. It makes them much more valuable if they haven't been played with. There is also a lot of interest in Pokemon cards right now. Watches are very popular at the moment, adds Hawley. Brands like Rolex and Breitling in particular, and any of the old Omega watches, especially in gold with diamond set vessels, can be worth phenomenal amounts of money. Fashion is another area that many people tend to overlook when going through family heirlooms, she adds. When someone has passed away, people tend to just bundle up the clothes. But these need to be sorted because certain items of vintage clothing are very hot at the moment. We've sold a lot of Mary Quant recently and it's getting phenomenal money because people want something that's sustainable but a bit different. What are some key factors that determine an item's value? With fashion, the condition is very important, needs to be surveyed carefully in case things have been altered, advises Hawley. Look for where you would expect obvious signs of wear, and also look out for things like moth damage. Some dresses from the 1920s are absolutely phenomenally beautiful, but they're no good if the condition is poor. So condition is a key thing to look for. Provenance, like original owner photos or service history, can significantly increase an item's value. We recently sold a good Rolex just short of £30,000, and the person that bought it was really pleased because of all the provenance that came with it, including a picture of the original owner wearing it in the 1970s. Also, all the service history and the original box add value, as people like to know the story of an item from its original purchase. That provenance of its journey through life into the new owner's hand makes a massive difference. Any story that you have with medals, like photographs, a uniform, diaries, etc., helps build a picture of the recipients of the medal, and that adds to the value. Some designers like Dior or early Vivienne Westwood pieces can fetch high prices. Certain designers, Dior is an obvious one, are more valuable. but there are also some really cool designers from the 60s and 70s to look out for. Some of the early Vivienne Westwood pieces can get an awful lot of money too. How do you know if an item is a fake or a copy? Just about anything that is worth money, people are prepared to fake, acknowledges Hawley, especially with watches and handbags. There are so many fakes. Hawley suggests getting uncertain items authenticated by a reputable auction house or antiques dealer. When is it worth getting a professional appraisal? Even items thought worthless can be valuable, so it's worth having things appraised.
That was everything for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496-062280. This is 07496-062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available in our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.